Sacktown Sports.
Headlines.
It's Simone Rickford with your Sacktown Sports headlines. Even though it was the second night of a back-to-back, Sacramento Kings found a way to manage a win with no sleep till Brooklyn.
Final seconds tick away. The win tonight is the 42nd of the season against 27 losses. They protect that number two spot in the Western Conference.
Beam business is booming because the Kings have officially clinched their first winning season since 2005-2006.
Like the beam, baby.
More good news for Sacramento and Kings guard Kevin Huerter as the MRI on his right hamstring came back clean following yesterday's contest. For more information on Red Velvet's status and this historic Kings run, be sure to check out SacktownSports.com and our Sacktown Sports app. Those hotter-than-fish grease Kings are back in action tomorrow night in the nation's capital taking on the Wizards. Tip-off slated for 5 right here on Sacktown Sports with game night coverage jumping off at 3:30. Tons of Friday fun and madness to be had as we check in on Busted Brackets, drop the latest NFL hot takes, and get you ready for the weekend. I'm Simone. Those are your headlines. Welcome into Cattles and Rami with special guest Whitey Gleason for Nick.
Not the boring, generic, milquetoast stuff coming from the network in Connecticut.
I'd describe him as the best, obviously.
Cattles.
He throws it out there. Speaks his mind. That's cool.
And Rami.
He's supposed to make people laugh. He's just an expert at it.
Cattles and Rami. Live and local in the afternoon.
Sacktown Sports.
That is the show. No Cattles. I am Rami. You know that if you're familiar with the show and you heard Simone in the update, special guest filling in for Nick Cattles this afternoon. It's an honor and a pleasure. Kevin Whitey Gleason.
Yeah,
in
it's
the
great
house.
To. Thank you.
They always tell me mic check when I forget to do that.
I wasn't sure. Are they doing it in there? So I'll just kind of pretend like.
Now you're on your own. You're on your own, Whitey.
Gotcha.
You're on your own there.
Great to be here on such an auspicious occasion as the Kings celebrating 42 wins.
This is a wild day. Kings celebrating 42 wins. NCAA tournament going on. Yeah. Turn your radios, turn your TVs down, turn your radios, or however you listen to us, youtube.com/SacktownSports. Is how you can watch us as well. Check out SacktownSports.com. But take in the college basketball action while you tune into the show today. It's also St. Patrick's Day. Are you a big St. Patrick's Day guy, right?
Gleason, I'm part Irish.
I didn't want to jump to any conclusions or make any assumptions.
I celebrate privately, I'll put it that way.
Okay. Yeah. Will there be a green beer or two had in the...
There may be. That may be the case. Maybe by the time we're done today, I may have already started that.
Let me get this out of the way off the top. We're going to have plenty of Kings talk. Kings coach Jordy Fernandez is going to be joining us at 4 o'clock. Looking forward to that. Much, much more, and some weirdness as there usually is on a Friday. It's always a weird thing when you're working with somebody, meeting somebody for the first time, and they got a nickname. You know what? You go by Whitey. I am to refer to you as Whitey.
You can call me if you want. My name is Kevin, whatever you're comfortable with. May I tell you the story?
No, whatever you're comfortable with.
I don't care. Years ago, I was starting in radio, and they said, okay, kid, punk, we're going to put you on the radio. Good for you. And your name is going to be Stretch Bergmeier. And I'd never been on the radio. And I said, no, it's not. You know, normally you're supposed to say, okay, whatever you say. I said, I can't do that.
Really wanted you to be Stretch Bergmeier?
Like, yeah, you're all set. Stretch, you start Monday doing sports. I was like, not going to happen.
No.
So they said, all right, what do you got? Well, Gleason is my actual name. And when I was a kid, my brother, Phantom, he has a nickname too, Mark, he used to be on stage too. He used to call me, he and my dad called me Whitey because I had blonde hair.
Ah, okay.
So, you know, it's kind of a sports thing. It's, you know, Whitey Ford,
sure.
Whitey Herzog.
Sure.
So I said, what about Whitey Gleason? And they said, you know, somebody really likes Stretch Bergmeier. I don't know who or why, but they said, okay. And it was one of those things kind of I thought, you know, eventually I'll change it, whatever. But here we are, and you're asking me all this time later.
Radio is such a weird place. Yeah. Stretch Bergmeier. So that's Whitey Gleason. Most of you know him. Probably more of you know him than know me. You can get in on the show as well. 800-920-1140 is how you can give us a call. You can text us 916-339-1140. And again, you can always comment on the YouTube page, youtube.com/SacktownSports. You said it, Whitey. First time they have a winning record since 2006. Last time this team made the playoffs with the 101-96 victory last night. I know De'Aaron Fox and a few other guys, they tried to sort of downplay what a winning record means. And I get it. From the competitor's standpoint, I get like not setting the bar low and always wanting more, Whitey. But I've been sort of sometimes I have to like prod and push my co-host Nick Hattles to just have a little more fun and enjoy things a little bit more. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And one thing I've been telling him and Kings fans is enjoy every benchmark. You know what I mean? Enjoy every hurdle as you go along here, especially as long as Kings fans have been suffering. And I don't think Kings fans should just they shouldn't do the same thing the players and the coaches might be doing, which is ho-hum, winning record. That's not what I came here for. Kings fans should sort of celebrate this, enjoy this, relish this. It's not the be-all, end-all, but it's a pretty cool thing that for the first time in 16 years, you got a winning team here in Sacramento.
Did you know, if I'm not mistaken, that the Kings, not only did they have the longest stretch in the NBA of seasons without a winning one, which now is broken, they had the second longest, too, which was like 83 to 98 or whatever it was, even though they made the playoffs a couple of times in there, they didn't have winning records. So you're right. And it is probably more important to fans right now than it is to the players. Players obviously just don't have time in the middle of the season to stop and go, hey, this is great.
Right.
But for fans, and I don't think you need to tell Kings fans twice. I mean, this year has just been, it has been truly, you know, we always say, oh, it's unbelievable. This year in some ways has bordered on the absolute unbelievable. And it's great after so many years of drudgery to have so many little steps along the way to wherever this is headed to celebrate.
And that win last night, 101-96 in Brooklyn on the third of four games where they travel out east, and it comes on the back end of back-to-backs with travel in between. They arrived at their hotel rooms at 3:30 in the morning. They lost an hour traveling with the time change and all that. 39% from the floor, just 101 points. That was the fewest points in any win that the Kings have had this season. And the word that I thought of when I was watching it to describe that win and afterwards was gritty, and that's exactly how Coach Mike Brown described it afterwards.
I never imagined that I would use that word with this team this year, gritty. The guys showed grit definitely tonight. You know, I told them I was proud of them. The game wasn't pretty offensively, but I thought we tried to get out and run. I thought we tried to move the ball. You got to give the Nets a lot of credit. They got long athletes that are 6'7" and bigger, and they just switch a lot of stuff. And sometimes that baits you into playing ISO ball, which we did a couple of times tonight. And usually when that happens, we stall out, and we did at times. But I thought we were just gritty, and we found ways to get stops. And
I thought gritty. Mike Brown thought gritty. Some might even call it ugly, Whitey, and watching how the Kings won yesterday. But I kind of expected that. Yesterday we talked about that game during the Cattles and Rami show here. And I said to Nick, not only was I ready and expecting maybe a sluggish Kings team to come out, and if they were going to win it, it might have to be an ugly one given the circumstances of the travel and everything else. I said yesterday, not to be the Debbie Downer or the party pooper here, I wouldn't be surprised if they lose this one, even though they're the better team than Brooklyn, just because understanding the schedules, the hardships of travel in the NBA and how a season can catch up to you, that looked like one last night where it might catch up to them. And they fought right through it and somehow pulled out the win.
You know, it was impressive last night. And I say this, you know, so many times about every Kings game now. This was impressive. That was impressive. But the Kings, for the most part, they've been one team in many games this year for three quarters, where you go through DeMontis. And then in the fourth quarter, it's Fox time, right?
Yeah.
And last night, it was like your closer didn't have his fastball. Fox, because they played the night before, whatever, he wasn't bad, but he just wasn't as good as he's been. And that fourth quarter, you could see he doesn't have that. It's just not there. It's like the closer's down tonight, so how do we close? And everybody picked up the slack. And I could be wrong, but I thought, you tell me if I'm wrong, I thought I saw the Kings play defense last night.
They sure did.
Okay.
No, you're right.
I didn't imagine that.
I have some numbers to prove it, which one of them is one of those things where it pops off the page, and it's surprising, if not shocking, when you talk about the Kings and what we've gotten used to them and from their defense this year. For 47 minutes and 54 seconds last night, Whitey, which 48 minutes is an NBA game, in case you didn't know that out there in YouTube land. 47 minutes and 54 seconds last night, they didn't allow a single second chance or fast break point. It would have been the first time since October 30th, 2015, that a team had not allowed points in either category throughout an entire game. I think it was Cam Johnson in like the last 5 seconds of the game just kind of weaved through the Kings defense and got a garbage layup or dunk when it didn't mean anything, and they called that a breakaway. If not for that, they go an entire game without allowing one single second chance or fast break point. And they've been pretty good on the fast breaks and transition defense. But one thing that's been a problem for this Kings team, especially in games like that where it gets slowed down and bogged down, is second chance points and allowing a team to get those offensive rebounds. What was it, 23 a couple weeks ago that they allowed to New York on the TNT game? That was impressive last night on the defensive side for the Kings in a lot of ways.
Most of your successful defensive possessions end in what? A rebound. So they dominated last night. Kings had a lot of offensive rebounds themselves last night, primarily because they didn't shoot the ball very well. But I also got to say, those Nets uniforms last night, yes.
You know, can I tell you something about those Nets uniforms? For some reason, they reminded me of the Pistons uniforms from the 80s, and my mind kept playing tricks on me as I was watching that game throughout the night, where I thought I was watching Kings and Pistons.
Oh, yeah, that's unfortunate.
Like, I knew it was the Nets, but, like, you know, you're just watching the game, and for some reason I kept on, like, falling into, it was Kings, Pistons. Those didn't they look like the 80s Pistons uniforms?
I know where you're going. I mean, I can remember when Dr. J wore those uniforms they had last night, so I go back a ways at a different perspective. I can see how, I mean, it's a lot of times it's kind of disorienting. I was watching the Suns and the Bucks this week, and the Bucks wore black and the Suns wore teal.
I didn't like those.
What?
Those Suns uniforms were weird. The ones that they wore against the Bucks. Mm-hmm. That didn't look like the Phoenix Suns to me.
Right.
I don't know.
That's it.
I don't want to be that guy. Kings win 101-96, a gritty victory. Some might even call it ugly. You can get in on the phones, 800-920-1140. Text the show, 916-339-1140. If you want to get in, you can always comment on the YouTube page, youtube.com/Sacktown Sports. That win last night had Whitey thinking maybe the unthinkable when it comes to this Kings team. It's Whitey Gleason. He's in for Nick. I'm Rami. Cattles and Rami. Back after this.
One mile at a time during the afternoon drive. Cattles and Robbie.
Sacktown Sports.
That's the show. Cattles in Vegas, as is JJ. We got Kyle Ledbetter and Simone on the other side of the glass. Yeah, they just happened to. It wasn't like planned for them to go there together. They just happened to.
That's what they told you. Sure. Yeah, I'm sure that's what happened. Yeah. Oh, I didn't know. And there he was.
I'm going out there next weekend. My first time. My first time going to
Really?
Vegas. Yeah.
Okay.
That's Whitey Gleason. In for Nick Cattles. I'm Rami. Talking about a Kings gritty, ugly victory over the Nets yesterday to guarantee their first winning season since 2006, 101-96. That win had Whitey thinking maybe the unthinkable when it comes to this Kings team, especially from the start of the season. Before we get into that, Norik is on the phones. He wants to get in on the Kings talk. What's up, Norik?
Hey, how are you doing, Rami?
I really enjoy
your show. I listen to it almost every afternoon on my drive home.
Appreciate that. Thank you, Norik.
I heard Whitey's voice on the radio, and it brought back some old memories. I don't know if he remembers me, but I used to call in a lot when I had a long drive for work back in late 90s, early 2000s.
Weren't you like a really smart guy, and we used to refer to you as a brain in a jar because that's how smart you were?
Oh, no.
My friend?
Yeah. Okay, we lost.
We're losing Norik. That's a bad phone connection. If anybody wants to call in just to catch up with Whitey.
Sorry, Norik.
We welcome it.
Nothing personal. I had nothing to do with it.
No, nothing personal at all. 800-920-1140 is how you can call. You can also text the show, 916-339-1140.
Clearly, the ground rules here are if anybody calls in to talk specifically to Whitey, you cut them off right away.
Hit that button that makes it sound like a bad connection. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Every radio station has
fine.
One.
No problem. It never works.
But Whitey, you had an interesting question about this game, which I wouldn't think one would have after the way that they won last night. But it's an interesting, you asked me this morning, is it possible the Kings are getting even better after you watched the way that they won the game last night? What made you ask that question to yourself as you were watching that win last night?
Because of the way they won, as I say, Fox wasn't Fox in the fourth quarter. And again, he was just tired. I'm not
sure.
Singling him out.
He's human.
For criticism.
What we found out last night is De'Aaron Fox is human.
Yeah, but they had to win with defense and they rebounded. And we think we know that those are areas in which, especially defensively, they're probably going to have to improve if they're going to make deep playoff runs. You know, this year in the NBA, we've learned we don't know half the stuff we think we know. But I think that's very encouraging at this point, second night of a back-to-back, to slog through a game like that, because it had kind of a, in some ways, not the Nets, not the opponent, but in other ways, had kind of a playoff feel in terms of the pace of the game.
Do you think that, because there is that old narrative, and I think there is truth to it, but do you think in today's NBA there is as much truth to the idea that the game slows down in the playoffs with as fast and as offensive as the NBA has become? I think that might be a little less true than it might have been even 10 years ago. You know what I mean? The game has progressed very quickly to the three-pointer, to sprinting up and down the court, getting up as many shots, as many possessions as you can get. It slows down in the postseason, but not like it used to.
I agree with you. I mean, but it's all relative.
Sure.
I mean, yeah, it's not going to be, you know, you look at the offensive numbers this year, offensive ratings for all the teams, and it's way up league-wide, but still the better teams, even last year, the better defensive teams are still the teams that have the best chance to go far.
Sure. And Nick and I have talked throughout the season, and certainly since the playoffs have seemed a real possibility, if not a sure thing, at this point, about the fact that the idea that as you go through the playoffs and you see different teams, you need to be able to find different ways to win, different ways to put the puzzle together. And that might mean different lineups, different rotations, different guys playing bigger roles off the bench. Like last night, and I think in the Bulls game too, you saw two teams that were very defensive but in their style of basketball. But also you need some length and some athleticism and some size to stay with them. And I think that's why we're going to talk more about Kessler Edwards later.
Incredible.
But I think having another weapon like that off the bench that changes sort of your dynamic and what you can do in terms of rotations and lineups as a game goes on. I agree with you, Whitey. It bodes very well for what this team can do in the playoffs.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to talking to Jordy Fernandez about this. You know, this is another thing that speaks volumes as to the potential of the Kings and how they've gotten to this point. March Madness, a lot of times we see teams, a bunch of freshmen, and the coach, Coach Calipari is famous for this. You get these guys that have never played together, and then by the end of the year, it's like it's a cohesive team. And the Kings, very quickly, and I know that some of the guys played together last year, but very quickly, this became a very functional and cohesive unit. And I think that speaks to, that's why a guy like Kessler Edwards is able to come in and this is what you do, and he performs. And that's really impressive, because this looks like a team that's been together for a couple years, and obviously they haven't.
They limited Brooklyn to just over 41% shooting from the floor last night. They held the Bulls the previous night to just over 39% shooting. That was the first time that they held back-to-back opponents under 42% since the end of November, start of December, against the Pacers and the Clippers. I'll just play devil's advocate because I agree with you that they showed something last night and have here recently we didn't necessarily know was in the arsenal in terms of ways that they can win the game.
If you're going to be devil's advocate, can you put little
sure,
horns up?
No problem.
Okay, all right. That helps me.
Just do you take it with a grain of salt that it was Brooklyn and Chicago and two teams that aren't great offensively and at scoring the basketball? When you look at where they were ranked coming into those two games, those aren't two teams that offensively are impressive or strike a lot of fear in you. Is there a grain of salt when you look at the way they won, given those teams and their offenses?
It's a good point, but I say no, because beggars can't be choosers. And also, you know, the Nets do pose some problems more offensively, I think, than the Bulls do. Yeah, they got DeMar DeRozan. But given that it was the second out of back-to-back, again, I know we've pointed that out, I thought that was a very encouraging sign. You're right. I mean, you have to keep doing it. But to do that on the road, second night, against a team that, you know, Michael Bridges is having a really good year, I thought it was impressive.
I take it with a slight grain of salt, especially given, you know, you saw a championship-caliber team in Milwaukee before you left for this trip. And for 2.5 quarters, almost 3 quarters, it looked like you could keep up with their not only their firepower, but their physicality and even stay in a game when it slows down to more of a pace that they want. What happened in the fourth quarter raised an eyebrow for me in terms of, oh, maybe they're not quite there yet. And even I think it was De'Aaron Fox after the game said that you can see that was a championship caliber team because they made us pay for every mistake that we made. And that's what championship caliber teams do. I don't see anybody out west. I keep saying this. And games like that only fortify this for me and make me believe it even stronger. I don't see anybody out west. Excuse me. I'm getting emotional. I don't see anybody.
Sorry, we'll be all right. It's okay.
I don't see
playoffs haven't even started yet. You're going to have to take it easy.
I don't see anybody out west who scares me, and especially nobody who is physical enough and slows down the game enough that would scare me in a seven-game series. I think – so I've been saying for a minute now, probably longer than most, I think they can come out of the Western Conference. I still just don't know if they have the physicality and the firepower to stay in a series with a Milwaukee or right. a Boston. But, I mean, that's a long, long ways off. You know what I mean? And if we get there, we're all going to be pretty happy that they're sitting there. You know what I mean?
If Denver, and I know they've had some wobbles lately. They had a big win last night. They maybe don't scare me, but they certainly have my attention. But, yeah, if that's the strongest criticism we have of the Kings, sure. Boy, they would struggle against Milwaukee, then obviously they've made great progress. Man, that team is really good.
Yeah, they are.
They lead in defensive rating like on every portion of the floor.
For sure, for sure. We'll get back to some Kings talk and the Kevin Huerter injury. We haven't talked about that till today. If you didn't hear it in Simone's update, at the top of the hour, scary moment last night. He leaves with a hamstring injury. Adrian Wojnarowski saying today the MRIs are negative. He's day to day, which I think is best case scenario when you see a guy limp off the court. But we'll talk about the injury, latest on that, and the ramifications of that coming up at 3 o'clock. And Jordy Fernandez, Kings assistant coach, he'll be joining us at 4 o'clock. We'll switch gears a little bit, talk some 49ers with Jason Aponte of Niners Nation and the Sprint Right Option podcast. He'll join Cattles and Rami next.
Live and local in the afternoon.
They always keep you on edge.
Cattles
and Rami
on Sacktown Sports.
That's the show. Cattles out in Vegas. JJ out there as well. You heard Simone on the update. Kyle, other side of the glass. Kevin Whitey Gleason. And for Nick this afternoon, your Western Conference wraparound magic number update coming up in just about 15 minutes. You can watch us. Give us those thumbs up, the likes over at youtube.com/Sacktown Sports. And if you go over there right now, you'll see our guest from Niners Nation and the Sprint Right Option podcast, Jason Aponte, joining us on the Folsom Lake Honda Hotline. Folsom Lake Honda, your one-stop Honda shop. Jason, how are you this afternoon, my man?
I'm great. Thank you guys for having me. It's a wonderful time with free agency and the draft coming up.
Our pleasure. It is. It's speculation season in the NFL, as I call it. One thing we don't have to speculate on, Javon Hargrave is a 49er. I was surprised by that move, but the 49ers tend to make surprising moves. Did that catch you off guard?
For me, not so much. I mean, the 49ers have developed a bit of a pattern with going out on the first day and identifying their guy. Now, whether that guy turns out to be an impact player or not, I think this is the biggest name that they've gotten. But the names that you can come to mind are Mako Smith, Jerick McKinnon. Those didn't work out. But when you look at last year, it was Mooney Ward, and that worked out very well. So they had a plan, and they kind of stick to it. The first day is like they go after someone that they target. I just didn't expect it to be a name like that, which was probably the biggest free agent on the market.
Jason, I know we're not even to minicamp yet, but looking at the roster as currently constructed, where do you think the strength of this roster is and where is it weakest?
It's offensive. You can't really improve more on Deebo, Ayuk, Kittle, McCaffrey. Of course, the offensive line, there's still a little bit of a question at right tackle. Everything else is kind of set, especially with Jake Brendel being back. I would say right now the weakest is probably edge. I know that the 49ers are expecting a big jump from Drake Jackson, and I think we all believe that that'll happen. But having an established speed rusher to complement Nick Bosa, Armstead, and Hargrave would be impactful. And I think the 49ers are trying to get back to that 2019 formula of Buckner, Armstead, Bosa, and Ford. There is someone that's out there, I believe, that can fill that role while they wait for Drake Jackson to develop and also draft someone who can possibly be an impact player if they so need.
Do you wonder if, because obviously Javon Hargrave, a difference maker, and they needed some push up the middle, and they needed somebody next to Nick Bosa to give offensive lines and offenses as a whole something else to worry about. But we know that the salary cap is an issue that teams have to deal with in the NFL. And when you sign to Javon Hargrave, you have to make tough decisions like saying bye to a Jimmy Ward, an Emmanuel Mosley, a Charles Omenihu, Azeez Al-Shaair. Do you wonder if maybe they're giving up too much to try and bring in a Javon Hargrave type of player?
I don't think so. I think they kind of braved for these departures. I think that they would compete if the market was correct. But when you see what Omenihu got, when you see what Ebukam got, that clearly put them out there. What the 49ers have been known to do is just build the depth. You see T.Y. McGill come back. Kevin Givens has returned. You have rotational pieces. I would expect a Kerry Hyder or Jordan Willis to be brought back in, if not both. And then you get yourself that edge. So I think they were prepared for all of this. And the reason that they're able to make a move for Hargrave is because their quarterback room is the cheapest in the league. I mean, you look around, the going rate is about $25, $30 million for, let's just say, Jimmy Garoppolo, right? And they're paying, I think, for all three, under $15 million at this point. So The way that they're able to move around and give more money to Hargrave is because their quarterback room is so cheap right now with all three.
Well, speaking of that quarterback situation, such as it is, what advice would you have for a 49er fan who's feeling conflicted over the signing of Sam Darnold?
If you're conflicted, I think it's because you realize that Sam Darnold has a ton of potential and you believe in the coach that can actually bring that out. But I do think that competition is healthy. I do think this is someone that Kyle Shanahan has coveted for a while. There's been a report out there that he tried to send a first-round pick to the Jets for Sam Darnold. Let's just say thank you that didn't happen, and he got him this way. Competition is good for either way, and it does kind of feel like a Geno Smith situation in Seattle in which you kind of take a shot on a guy. You still have your Russell Wilson. You still have the guy that you believe in, and if you do get into those traits – we have to remember that the 49ers are the best at getting guys open. Debo's wide open. Ayuk's wide open. Kittle's wide open. We know Sam has the tools. I think it comes down to decision-making. But I feel that competition is good. And if Trey Lance is what you think he is, if Brock Purdy is what you think he is, then there shouldn't be anything to worry about.
Let me ask you this. It's a two-part hypothetical question. That's very meta, but that's how we roll here.
It's Friday.
It's Friday. All right. So, A, do you think there is open competition between Sam Darnold and Trey Lance to start the season? Because we know about Brock Purdy's injury situation, and best case scenario, he's ready by September. So I'm assuming somebody other than Brock Purdy is starting week one. Do you think there's a chance Sam Darnold wins that job from Trey Lance? And whether it's Darnold or Trey Lance, do you think it's possible either of those guys performs well enough that even when Purdy is healthy, he doesn't necessarily get his starting job back?
Ooh, man, it is Friday. Okay, so the first part of this the first part of this is I definitely believe it's a competition. But okay, if you and I and many 49er fans believe Trey Lance is what he is supposed to be, then he should win this, right?
Sure.
And I do think that there is a chance that if Trey Lance beats out Sam Darnold, which I expect, and I don't want to say I fully expect, but I believe in his talent and I believe in the kid. But if Trey Lance goes out there and becomes what they thought they were getting with the third pick, then you make it awfully hard to turn it right back over to Brock Purdy. But I will say this. Being at the Combine, listening to, you know, John Lynch speak, listening to the team speak about Brock Purdy, you're going to have a hard time trying to assuage this locker room to not play Brock Purdy. George Kittle was on a podcast saying, I don't know how you bench a guy who's never lost a game. In the NFC Championship game, he was hurt in the third play, so he said he didn't really attribute it to that. But I do think there is a way that Trey Lance makes that decision incredibly hard, and I think that's what the 49ers actually would like to invite, is Trey Lance starts to scratch that surface, and now you have a difficult decision to make. If you have to turn it right back over to Brock Purdy, then you've got a bigger issue, I believe.
Okay, Jason, the Jimmy G era in San Francisco, it's finally officially over. So if you had to sum up the Garoppolo era as a 49er quarterback in, I don't know, three words or less, how would you do it? What would you say?
Ups and downs. But I do think that 49er fans kind of forget the time before Jimmy Garoppolo, meaning C.J. Beathard, Brian Hoyer, and those years in between with Chip Kelly and Jim Tomsula. And Jimmy was a shot in the arm, stabilized the organization, gave fans hope, electrified Levi's Stadium, and they won a bunch of games. Now, obviously, we know that it didn't result in the ultimate. And you said three words, and here I am just like babbling on. I'm sorry.
You gave the three. This is totally acceptable. Yeah, totally acceptable. Yeah.
I just feel that Jimmy Garoppolo has been a punching bag for a long time. With people losing sight of what he brought to this team and how many games that he did win, I'm choosing to remember the good times, and there were ups and downs. I'm choosing to remember the wins. There were a lot of great signature wins. My favorite personal Jimmy Garoppolo game, and I know everybody says it's the Saints, But it's got to be that Week 18 game against the Los Angeles Rams, battling back and with the season on the line, with the injury being fresh, not knowing if he was going to play all week, and being able to come back and win that game. That is my all-time favorite Jimmy Garoppolo moment, and that's what I'm going to choose to remember him.
Yeah, I think, honestly, I think mine would be better than believed, to your point. Jimmy's time here, I thought he did a lot of really good things, ultimately.
Jason Aponte, Niners Nation, our guest for a couple more minutes here on Cattles and Rami. Actually, last one for you, Jason. Free agency, not in the rear view now, but the major moves have been made. The next big postmark on the NFL calendar will now be the NFL draft. I don't remember exactly what the number was. I want to say 11 draft picks they now have with the compensation picks. Any chance you think they try and stack up a couple of those and move up, or is this about restocking the cupboard and rebuilding that depth that you talked about to start this interview?
It's a little bit of both, I think, at this point. I think the 49ers are in a spot where there are some impact edge rushers that can be brought in on one-year deals that would come cheap because they're ready to chase a ring. The one name that I keep bringing up is Justin Houston from Baltimore, was used as a situational pass rusher last year, 11 sacks. His snap share went down and somehow he had more pressures. He's somebody who you can add in. Now, if you have a Justin Houston, you add to that edge, your needs in the draft actually become fewer. Now, you sign Isaiah Oliver, nickel corner. You still have Samuel Womack. I would like to see them add one more cornerback to this secondary. But if your needs are fewer because of free agency, now you can stack up. And let's not forget, for the first time in a long time, 49er fans, they have a first round and a second round pick next year. Imagine that. So there is, on top of the five comp picks that they got from all the departures and hires, all of the 11 picks that they have now, they certainly have the ammo to go up and identify an impact player in the second round and move up if they so choose.
That's Jason Aponte. Check out Niners Nation and the Sprint Right Option podcast. Follow him on Twitter at Jason Aponte 2103. Joining us on the Folsom Lake Honda Hotline. Folsom Lake Honda, your one-stop Honda shop. Jason, really appreciate the time and the insight, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you guys for having me, and have a great day.
Appreciate it. There's Jason Aponte of Niners Nation and the Sprint Right Option podcast. Quick break, back to some NBA talk, our Western Conference whip around, magic number update, and how did we not get to that? All coming up, Cattles and Rami.
Cattles and Rami. Cattles and Rami.
Sactown Sports.
One brings Maklof magic, while the other, we're still trying to figure that out.
Cattles and Rami.
Sactown Sports.
To the Edwin Dia. During conference, is my mic on? Are we doing this on
no,
the
air? No, it was not.
Okay. I think it is now. It is now, right?
It is now, okay. Yes.
I was trying to talk to you off the air. That's all right, though. We'll get to Edwin Diaz in just a second. And how did we not get to that? Oh, that's the greatest intro music ever. And you're not going to hear it for a while. We'll tell you why in just a second. I wanted to do our Western Conference whip around. Do we have our NBA on NBC music fired up and ready to go for our Western Conference whip around on the Cattles and Rami show? Hit the music. There it is.
Round Ball Rock by John Tesh.
Oh, baby. Probably the best sports theme music ever. Am
you know
I wrong?
The words, right?
Basketball. Yeah, of course I know the words. Come on, Whitey Gleason. And for Nick Hattles today, there wasn't a lot of action in the NBA and the Western Conference last night, and especially not a lot of action as it pertains to the Sacramento Kings and trying to lock up a playoff spot. The Nuggets were in action last night. They end their losing streak over the Pistons, 119 to 100, so you don't gain any ground on the one seed Denver Nuggets. Yeah, I'm keeping an eye on that. And yeah, I got a magic number for the one seed. It's 18.
Yeah, you and I and Simone and Kyle and then whoever. I think we'd give the Pistons a go right now.
You think
we
so?
We might not beat them, but I think we give them a go.
How's the jumper, Whitey? How's the jumper these days?
If Wiseman's guarding me, I'm going to have a good night. Let me just put it that way.
Okay, fair enough. The only other game that had anything to do with the Kings in the Western Conference last night was the Phoenix Suns. They topped the Orlando Magic 116 to 113. You caught that one? Was it a good game?
I got tired of March Madness. And then I watched that game. It was a tremendous game.
Nice. The Thunder were in action last night. That's the only other Western Conference action. They fall to the Raptors 128 to 111 if you were worried about the Thunder. they lost again. So you should be a little less worried about the
news.
Thunder. Now, have you been following the magic number as we update it every day on the Cattles and Rami show?
I get Gleason. Too anxious. I have to wait till later in the year. I get too anxious to be locked into that.
Not here
point.
On Cattles and Rami. I've been updating the magic number for weeks. For weeks here.
Where are we?
Well, I gave you the one seed magic number. That's 18. That's a little silly, right? We shouldn't talk about the one
Pacific
seed.
Pacific Division magic number.
I should add that. I should add a Pacific Division magic
Whitey's
number.
Whitey's on top of his
what
game.
What kind of outfit is this?
Because I've already gotten chastised for having too many magic numbers, Whitey. But nobody here to chastise me today.
Exact opposite. We're saying he doesn't have enough magic
More
numbers.
More magic numbers.
Yeah.
The magic number to clinch a playoff spot. Whitey Gleason and the rest of Sacramento. Drum roll, please. It was 7 yesterday. It's 6 today, ladies and gentlemen. The magic number to clinch a playoff spot is 6 as we sit here.
So that's any combination March of 17th. Kings wins
and I forget who's the 7 seed today. It changes on a day-to-day
basis.
It is Minnesota. Any combination of Kings wins and Minnesota losses that adds up to 6.
Oh, man.
Means you are in the playoffs.
Deal.
Sacramento. Yes, sir. It gets even better, Whitey. Yesterday, this number didn't move, but I told you yesterday, for the first time, the magic number to clinch a home playoff series.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Drum roll, please. Hit single digits for the first time yesterday. It's 8 games. The magic number is 8 to get a home playoff series in Sacramento. Top three seed. Magic number was 10 yesterday. Drum roll, please. It's down to 9 today. And to clinch the 2 seed, that number was 15 yesterday. Magic number to clinch the 2 seed is down to 14. These numbers get more and more realistic.
I need my Pacific Division.
Every day. I'll work on it. You know what? I'm going to work on it, and I'm going to give it to you before we get out of here today. I promise you I'll get you a Pacific Division magic number before we get out of here.
You know, they used to hang division banners in the arena here. I don't know if they would now, but they actually have a history of hanging division championship banners.
I did say last week on the show, I'm here to hang banners, baby.
Okay.
I'm not here for moral victories. I'm here to hang banners. If it's a division banner, then I'll take that, too.
Okay.
You can always give us the likes over there at youtube.com/SacktownSports. Please, we need to be liked. Please, go over there. And just hit that little thumbs up. That's our Western Conference whip round. Do we have an open for how did we miss that or no? I forget what we have opens for. I'm not usually in this chat.
I don't know either. Someone would have had to tell me.
Okay, well, every week there's something that slips through the cracks. And then on Friday, we're like, how'd we not get to that?
Yeah.
And this week, it was what went down at the World Baseball Classic. Do we have that, Kyle? The low light of what happened to Edwin Diaz? Did we ever get that? This has been a fun segment. This is good. This is live radio, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, for a minute when you were saying, do we have an open, I thought you were asking me. And I was like,
we're on timeout from trying to do the YouTube anymore, too.
Yeah, Simone and Kyle are doing some YouTube content during the breaks, which is great. That's cool. We want to drive up those numbers, but, you know, let's have this stuff ready to go. Before we go to do the YouTube show. Okay, this was a couple days ago at the World Baseball Classic as Puerto Rico gets a big victory, but then tragedy strikes.
The Dominican players, they're all top step right now, fearing for him and feeling for him as well. Oh, no.
So that was the Mets closer going down with what appears to be, I can't find exactly what the injury was. I tried this morning and I was trying again during the break, but it appears to be a serious knee injury. Kyle, you have more detail?
So I believe it is a torn patellar tendon.
Ooh, I've done that.
I've actually torn my
patella tendon before. It's not.
That's the one in front, right?
Yeah, and it literally just feels like your leg is hanging from the knee down. Like you have no. You have no control over like bending
it. Attaches your kneecap, kind of.
Yeah, it's just dangling.
Man. Yeah, okay. And that would explain why he had multiple teammates carrying him off the mound after the injury at the World Baseball Classic because he just couldn't move the leg.
And
he was celebrating?
Yeah, it was during the celebration that he stepped on a teammate's ankle, foot, leg, and it took a weird bend and
it was almost grammatican.
Some people might not like what I'm about to say. I hate the World Baseball Classic. I hate it. Whitey, I don't know about you. And I generally hate. Now, don't take this wrong. All right? I love America.
Happy Friday, everybody.
I love America, ladies and gentlemen. All right? The Arab guy on the station loves America. Don't take this the wrong way, okay?
You've cleared yourself, Rami. You're good.
I'm a patriot. I love America. I love patriotism. But to me, Whitey, to me, sport for country is a grift, man. It's a grift. I don't believe in sport for country. I think it's a huge cash grab. They just slap flags on it and play it. They tug at your heartstrings. They play on your emotions for people who do love their country as I do. And it's pointless, man. These guys had the Mets paid this dude, and Mets fans paid this dude in terms of how much they of their belief and hope that they put in him for what might finally be a great season. And now the Mets and Mets fans go into their season without one of the best closers in all of baseball so that he could go and play for his country. And I know, hey, man, it means different things to different people. I'm not here to mock anybody's beliefs, but I've never thought that winning a soccer game, winning at the Olympics, winning a baseball game did anything to make America or any other place any better. You know what I mean?
This is a hot take.
To me, the whole thing is a sham. The whole thing is a sham, and Edwin Diaz got hurt and basically ruined the Mets and their fan season for nothing. For basically nothing, man. Call me crazy.
I just think sports at their best, they do bring people together. And I think the World Baseball Classic, it's not as popular here as it is in other countries, but was somewhere people just set a record for the most people who dyed their hair blonde, and it was one of the countries in the World Baseball Classic in support of their team, and I'm not sure I have the country right, so I don't want to say. People in other countries, they love it, and people, some of the players from the other countries, it means a lot to them, so I think there's some upside there. You're right, of course, but that's all sports are now, other than at the purely amateur level, it's just about making money.
Sure.
It would terrify me if I owned a team, like if I owned the Padres, and I have Manny Machado wants to play for the Dominican, and so does Soto, and I got all these guys, and Yu Darvish is playing for Japan, and they don't know when he's going to be ready to go. But it works, and people get excited about it. If you can get people excited about anything, having anything to do with baseball nowadays, I think you have to do it.
Beyond an Edwin Diaz-like injury, I just don't want, if I'm an owner, a GM, a coach, a manager, I don't want those miles. I don't want those innings. I don't want those innings on a pitcher's arms. I don't want those miles on a guy's legs running around the bases or out in the outfield. You know what I mean?
And you have that right, I think, as an owner, but the owner who does that, Mark Cuban used to talk about this with like Nowitzki, you know, playing international basketball. The owner who does that all of a sudden for the players is like, well, don't play for that guy. He won't let you play for your country. I agree with
sure.
you. Owners have that right, but it's dangerous for them to exercise.
And that's a big investment that these guys are just sending over there.
But you're the fun guy, Rami. You're the one who likes these types of spectacle events.
You know what's fun? Hit Edwin Diaz's entrance music. That's fun. That's fun to me. That's fun. And you know what? We're not going to hear that.
You can play it now when they wheel him down the hospital, you know, on the gurney. Right? Ready for his next MRI or whatever.
Damn, Whitey.
It makes him feel better, too.
That's a really funny image of someone carrying him in the wheelchair down.
Thinking, oh, he'll love this. And he's like flipping him off and things, you know.
Damn, I thought that dark joke would be coming out of my mouth. That's Whitey Gleason, ladies and gentlemen. In for Nick Cattles today on the Cattles and Robbie Show. We'll get back to some Kings talk right after this. Jordy Fernandez, Kings assistant coach, he's going to join us at 4. But after this, we'll have the latest on that Kevin Huerter injury. How did the Kings handle it? And what are some of the repercussions of it? Cattles and Rami on a Friday. Back after this on Sactown Sports.
Cattles
and Rami.
Sactown Sports.